Blog Talk Radio.
George Pataki, probably the most irrelevant Republican presidential candidate, right up there with Bobby Jindal, right in his territory. He decided to come out swinging against Edward Snowden because Edward Snowden joined Twitter. We're gonna laugh at him over that. We're gonna mock him over that. We also have the Taliban taking over a very important strategic city in Afghanistan. And what our takeaway from that should be, because we know, as Washington is inclined, as usual, to say, well, now we need to kick up the number of troops, and now we need to be more involved in the region. Really, the takeaway should be the opposite, and I'll explain exactly why. Ben Carson, as we all know by now, said the most ridiculous anti-Muslim things you've ever heard, saying it's unconstitutional for a Muslim to run, he'd never, ever advocate for a Muslim. Well, what percentage of the Republican Party, in certain states, but what percentage agrees with him? It's amazing. I mean, remember, this is from the people who say they are the constitutionalists. And when I give you the number later, you're going to say, good googly moogly. We got Michael Savage in the show. We got Rush Limbaugh again, Brian Fisher again. I just have a show packed with right-wing radio hosts. Rick Santorum and Bill Maher got into a back and forth on socialism. So a whole bunch of stuff. Let's go ahead and get started here, and we'll kick it off with an interesting story about corruption. We may have some good news. I don't know if I've ever said that on the show, good news on the corruption front in America. Senator Robert Menendez is facing corruption charges, and some of them were just thrown out, but others haven't been, and they were actually upheld. And the decision from the federal court might eventually challenge Citizens United and McCutcheon. So what happened is Menendez solicited $700,000 from a big money donor for his super PAC, and now he's brought up on charges, and the court is actually cracking down, and they're saying, you really can't do that. So here's part of what the court said. Quote, the Constitution does not protect an attempt to influence a public official's acts through improper means, even if contributions to majority PAC, which, by the way, is Bob Menendez's PAC in this case, had no objective value to Menendez. They unquestionably had value to Majority PAC as an entity, and the federal bribery statute criminalizes corruptly seeking anything of value, even for another person or entity, in return for being influenced in the performance of an official act. Okay, now, what was just laid out there, number one, it should be obvious, but number two, it actually flies in the face of everything that we learned from the decision on McCutcheon and the decision on Citizens United. Now, in those decisions, they had, or I should say in the Citizens United decision, they had this line in there, which is incredible. They said, quote, independent expenditures do not give rise to corruption or the appearance of corruption. So not only do independent expenditures, so like super PAC expenditures, not only is that not corruption, pause, it is, continue, but they're saying it doesn't even appear to be corruption. It doesn't even have the appearance of corruption. To who? To you? Well, then you guys are mentally deficient on the court. I don't know what the fuck is wrong with you. How could you say that that's not the case? All one would have to do is look through the congressional voting record or look at the policies that these guys push for and look at who their lobbyists are and who their donors are, And then you're going to go, oh, right, there is a direct relationship between who gives money during the political campaigns and what they end up getting in terms of policy or what the politicians push for. Now, the good news that comes out of this is, well, if it works its way up, so if this case works its way up through the court system and it goes to the Supreme Court again, maybe they'll hear it, maybe we'll have an opportunity to, you know, crack down with some new regulations when it comes to money in politics, or just simply the ability of Congress act on money in politics by reversing some, you know, the Citizens United decision, the McCutcheon decision, et cetera. I wouldn't hold my breath because the court, unfortunately, is still stacked in the wrong direction a little bit now, but it, there's a little bit of wiggle room, it looks like, through the court system on this issue. Now, again, I wouldn't bank on it, and we should still push forward with Move to Amend and with Wolfpack and with Represent.us and all the different ways in which we're trying to fight back against the system here. But at least we have a story coming out today where we can all take a little bit of a deep breath here and go, okay, all hope is not lost. And it's not only not lost because of what we're doing in terms of the constitutional amendment and things like that, but also perhaps there's going to be an opportunity or another opportunity at some point through the court system, because here we have a federal judge saying, of course that's corruption. What are you, crazy? That's absolutely corruption. Look at what we're talking about here. And finally, let me just add this, because I think this is incredibly important. There's a new Bloomberg poll. 78% of the American people hate money in politics. They don't want anybody having influence. They don't want corporations having influence. They don't want labor unions having influence. Yeah, and they're right about that. They're right about that. So we have support, an overwhelming majority of Democrats, a majority of independents, a majority of Republicans. They're all on our side with this. So it's just a matter of time and fighting for us to get the end result, which is some kind of a system that has clean elections, and at least we can limit the amount of corruption in the system. All right, now, let me break out this George Pataki story early, because he deserves to get a fucking ass whooping over this. Republican presidential candidate George Pataki, who's polling at roughly negative 13%, decided to attack Edward Snowden after Snowden launched his Twitter account yesterday. So here's what Pataki said. Quote, "Some say you have courage. I saw real courage on September 11th. You are just a traitor who put American lives at risk." All right. Now, that's obviously absurd, number one. But number two, he had to do it. He had to bring up 9/11 immediately. Like, on the right, did they just think that's like a debate ender? Conversation over, drop the mic and walk out? If anything, it's a debate ender in the sense that you automatically lose. We got to come up with a version of Godwin's Law that applies to 9/11 as well. For those of you who don't know, Godwin's Law is like this fake internet rule which says whoever invokes the Nazis first in some kind of a debate loses. And honestly, it's probably true over 80% of the time that you have no out, so you're like, yeah, well, then you're like a Nazi. But, I mean, obviously, it should go without saying that in some situations, Nazi references are perfectly legitimate. So it's not really a real rule. But the sentiment behind it is kind of true, that people over-invoke that in debates. Well, the Republicans go right to this. Oh, yeah? Well, 9/11. And what the fuck is the implication? Like, Pataki's like, I was against 9/11. How about you, Ed Snowden? Huh? I guess you were for it, judging by your actions. Yeah, but that doesn't make any sense. That's clearly not true. In fact, if you really think about it, the crowd that wanted to give away all of our civil liberties and our constitutional rights after 9/11, they're the ones who really gave the terrorists what they wanted. A guy like Edward Snowden is refusing to give the terrorists what they want. If you listen to a lot of the terrorists, they say, if only we can get the Americans to give away all their rights and then, you know, go bankrupt by spending money on all these unnecessary wars. Edward Snowden is the guy who's like, yeah, no, let's preserve our civil liberties. And he risked his life to do that. He gave up, you know, what he was doing. He had to give up his job. He gave up his life at the time with his girlfriend. He didn't know where he was going to end up, but he said, I think this is the right thing to do because the American people need to know when their government is acting in an illegal and unconstitutional way. it's incredible how the right, or I should say many people on the right, have flipped it in their head, where somehow they've convinced themselves that Snowden is the bad guy and they're the good guy, even though they're the ones who are against the Constitution and civil liberties, and he's the one that's for them. He said one more thing here, too. Let me run through this. Twitter is a great American company that should not give a platform to terrorists or traitors. Shut down Snowden today. Okay, what? How, under what interpretation, even a bullshit interpretation, is he a terrorist? And how can you even call him a traitor? Again, he's standing up for American values. You're the one that's trying to tear him down. And another classic, unfortunately, right-wing authoritarian idea of, I dislike this person. Censor them, please. But again, that's a signal of, I lose. I can't win in a battle of ideas and concepts, so I would like to censor the opposition. Please kick Edward Snowden off Twitter. And you guys know, man, I've spoken about this before. I wouldn't get rid of white nationalists on Twitter. I wouldn't get rid of racists. I wouldn't get rid of Christian fundamentalists or Muslim fundamentalists. I wouldn't get rid of the KKK or ISIS on Twitter. In fact, it might be good for some intelligence gathering if they're publishing all this stuff publicly. You might want to have some people looking into that. But I say that because I believe in freedom of speech. I actually believe in the principle behind it. Now, I understand that Twitter's a private company. They can do whatever the fuck they want with their company. But still, the idea behind it, the principle behind letting everybody talk and not censoring people, is the right one and is the more democratic one and is the one that shows that you believe more in civil liberties. But this guy, he's not even talking about the KKK or ISIS here and saying, oh, I'm appalled by what you're doing, Twitter. He's saying, Edward Snowden, the guy who's a whistleblower, who let the American people know that their government was breaking the law and acting unconstitutionally, well, we got to shut down that guy. No, what we need to do is shut down you, George Pataki, or more specifically, your terrible arguments. And I don't think we're going to have to wait that much longer to do it, because, again, you're polling at -89%. Nobody likes you, and you're not gaining any more friends by making arguments like this against people who clearly are and will be judged in the history books as an American hero. Okay. Now, let's do a little segment here on the Taliban. The Taliban just successfully took over the important Afghan city of Kunduz, and this comes after us being in Afghanistan for a very long time now. Since 2001 we've been there. So the Daily Beast reports on this, quote, it was an especially victorious occasion for the Taliban, which has been declared dead multiple times. So we actually have a definitive history here of just that, the number of times that the Taliban has been declared dead. And what this is going to show you here, what this is going to illustrate, is how ineffectual American foreign policy is, and specifically in Afghanistan. So in April 2002, this was the first time that we declared the Taliban dead. Condoleezza Rice said the following, quote, with the Taliban eliminated and Al-Qaeda badly damaged, we have moved into the second stage of our war on terror. In July 2002, George W. Bush said, in Afghanistan, we defeated the Taliban regime. And that was just the first step. In September 2002, Bush said, the Taliban's ability to brutalize the Afghan people and to harbor and support terrorists has been virtually eliminated. In May 2003, Bush said, in the Battle of Afghanistan, nations from Central and Eastern Europe supplied soldiers and special forces and peacekeepers to help defeat the Taliban, to help destroy the terrorists, and to bring freedom to the Afghan people. In September 2004, Bush said, and as a result of the United States military, the Taliban is no longer in existence, and the people of Afghanistan are now free. December 2004, Bush said, in Afghanistan, America and our allies, with a historically small force and a brilliant strategy, defeated the Taliban in just a few short weeks. In October 2005, Bush said, "Over the years, these extremists have used a litany of excuses for violence. The Israeli presence on the West Bank, or the U.S. military presence in Saudi Arabia, or the defeat of the Taliban, or the Crusades of 1,000 years ago." Again, he said, defeat of the Taliban there. But eventually, didn't believe it. In December 2008, he said, "The Taliban was brutalizing the people of Afghanistan, and they're not in power, and I just cited the progress that is undeniable. Now, is there more work to be done? You bet. But I never said the Taliban was eliminated. I said they were removed from power." Oh, okay. See, this is how the game works, man. This is how the military-industrial complex works. Just take everybody on a roller coaster, you know, from 1 month to the next or 1 year to the next, and you say, "We've made tremendous progress. We've defeated the enemy." Then you come out next year and you say, "There's a resurgence among the enemies of freedom. We need to go back and crack down on them." And then you do that and you declare victory, and then another year later you say, "Well, you know, there's been another wave, and we need to make sure to continue to preserve freedom. Let's fight again." And it's really an Orwellian idea of, let's do perpetual war, and as we're doing perpetual war, let's define that as perpetual peace. Endless war equals endless peace. We're only at peace when the U.S. military is fighting everybody and their mother. That's the way that a lot of people have come to view this. So you go around the internet today, you look at all different websites or you read different newspapers, and you see what people are saying about the situation in Afghanistan right now and the city that fell. What's everybody doing? They're going, "Well, I mean, obviously, we got to go back in and we got to fight them and we got to keep them away from that city." That's what any rational person would say, right? And here's my response. Why would you do that? We see what happens historically. So let's say we do go back in. And let's say we take back the city. And then everybody, "Oh, yeah, the victory, victory. Let's do another fucking speech with a mission accomplished banner behind us." Then what? Then what? What happens then? Well, I mean, should we? Let's spend billions of taxpayer dollars and stay there. Are we sure the American people want that? Is that what we want our money going towards when our schools are underfunded? When some people don't have health care? Is that what we want to do? And guess what happens? If we take the city back, if we stay there for a long period of time, eventually we're going to leave. And when we leave, what's going to happen? The Taliban's going to come right back. So we can take back this city. We can, you know, beat back the Taliban into the mountains again. And then we stave off them taking control for another 5 years or 10 years or however long we stay there. And then the second we move out, we're right back to square one again. Now, the argument that I'm making, is it in any way pro-Taliban? Fucking of course not. Don't be ridiculous. Don't mischaracterize people. Don't strawman people. The idea that we're getting at is there's a lot of shitty regimes in a lot of places all around the world. Why the fuck would we pick and choose? You know, that's the one that we really got to get rid of, and that we got to stay in that place. Well, then why are you not concerned about South Sudan, for example, where there was an article that came out the other day where there's a civil war going on, there's fighting going on, and there's rampant child fucking and child slavery. I don't hear, where are all the moral crusaders, the people who drank the American exceptionalist Kool-Aid, the people who believe in imperialism? We need to go to South Sudan to bring freedom! We can go down a list of countries that have horrendous regimes, whether it's North Korea, whether it's in the Congo, whether it's in South Sudan, whether it's some of our top allies. I mean, there's a spectrum of, you know, how good a country is, how much they embrace civil liberties and human rights, and versus how bad they are. And some of the people who we do business with, Brunei, they just implemented Sharia law. Saudi Arabia is a Salafist government. They're horrendous. Malaysia tolerates slavery. We're like, you guys want to get in on the trade deal that we're about to do? So it's not about that. It's not about human rights. It's not about, hey, how can we really be altruistic? How can we be the world policeman in a good sense and really look after people? It never was about that. It's more about imperialism, it's more about control, it's more about geopolitics, and unfortunately, it's more about natural resources. We've spoken about it before. In Iraq, it was an oil situation, and of course, the military-industrial complex got a tremendous benefit out of that. In Afghanistan, you have opium and you have minerals, and for people to say, let's go back in there now, well, they're almost admitting that all the original rationalizations for the war were bullshit. Because what did they originally say? Even in Afghanistan, what did they originally say? Well, the problem is that the Taliban is looking after al-Qaeda. So they gave them a safe haven after 9/11. But then we went in there and we wiped out al-Qaeda in Afghanistan. We wiped them out. Listen to the CIA. They say there's less than 100 al-Qaeda members in Afghanistan. So mission accomplished. You're done. Al-Qaeda attacked us. I hate the Taliban, but they didn't attack us on 9/11. It was al-Qaeda that attacked us. But then they just decided to move the goalposts and say, okay, well, we got al-Qaeda. But hey, let's stay there anyway, and let's fight the Taliban. Again, why? Because it's not really about we're supposed – these are the enemies. We need to fight them. There are other things that come into play. And if you accept what their arguments are about why we should be there, oh, protect freedom, all this nonsense, which isn't true, even according to their own standards that they claim are the reason we're there, we're failing. You declare victory every couple months or every few years, and then you go right back to, oh, look, fuck, there's another wave. We got to go back there and stay there. It's perpetual war. It's perpetual occupation. It's our tax dollars going towards shit we don't want it to go towards. And all the while, the people in Washington never learned their fucking lesson, and it's almost like we blew trillions of dollars and we got nothing to fucking show for it. You wanted to take out bin Laden, fine. You know, go send the special forces, knock them out the way you did. But anything after, okay, now stay there. Let's do a military invasion. Let's stay in Afghanistan. Let's stay in Iraq. Let's go to Syria, all this shit. No, we didn't. We don't agree to that. We didn't sign up for that, and it's not productive. In fact, what it's doing is it's making the problem worse. So if you want to pick and choose where we do these interventions, just admit that you're really not objective, because there are worse human rights atrocities going on in other places, and nobody bats a fucking eyelash over those. And then even when we do the interventions, they don't fucking work anyway. Okay. Let's do one more here, and then we'll take a break. So Ben Carson, as we all know by now, said the other day, quote, "I would not advocate that we put a Muslim in charge of this nation. I absolutely would not agree with that." Now, he also went on to say that a Muslim president was unconstitutional, which is an absurd statement. It's clearly wrong. The Constitution explicitly states that there shall be no religious test for office. But today, we learn that Republicans loved that comment. Now, I know a lot of you are probably thinking, well, duh. But in all seriousness, I didn't know that it was this bad. I didn't know it would get to this extent. So this is from public policy polling. They say 72% of North Carolina Republicans believe a Muslim should not be allowed to be president of the United States. 12% aren't sure. 72% of North Carolina Republicans say a Muslim shouldn't even be considered. They say should not be allowed to be president of the United States. So you can be an American, you can be 100% American, but if you're a Muslim, we're disqualifying you. Well, that would be the definition of a religious test for office. So they're advocating something that is crystal clear in that it's unconstitutional. But this is the party that always says that they believe in the Constitution, and they don't think it's debatable. These are the guys that, number one, they'll wrongly interpret the Second Amendment. But they will quickly invoke the Second Amendment in arguments about guns. Second Amendment, what am I going to do? I can't disagree with it. It's in the Constitution. It's not debatable. That's the whole point of the Constitution. Then when it comes to Muslims, they're like, Constitution, smonstitution. I need some toilet paper. You got an extra copy of the Constitution? And they also say they believe in religious liberty and small government. Is this religious liberty? Is the opposite of religious liberty. Is this small government? It's the opposite of small government. It's the government saying, I am going to ban you from doing certain things because you are a certain kind of person, a certain kind of American. Guys, you can have it one way or the other. This is the thing I want to get across to them. Like, I get it, you're bigots, you're intolerant, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, you can have it one – you can either say – hey, I am an authoritarian, I am a tyrant, I want to make rigid rules that everybody has to follow, or you can say, I'm a constitutionalist and I believe in democracy and I believe in freedom. You can't have it both ways. You're not allowed to say, I want to ban Muslims for running for president, and then also say, I believe in freedom and democracy. No, you don't believe in freedom and democracy, because if you're banning Muslims simply because they're Muslim for running for office, well, that's the opposite of that. And every time I read one of these things, the first thing that comes to mind, every time I see a poll like this, the first thing that comes to mind is Keith Ellison. Keith Ellison is a Muslim congressman. He's a Democrat. He's liberal. I mean, this guy, in no way, shape, or form, does he believe in any kind of theocracy. In fact, the Republicans overwhelmingly believe in theocracy compared to a guy like Keith Ellison, especially the ones running for president right now. So they believe in theocracy. He's a Muslim. He doesn't believe in theocracy, but no, we're going to ban you from running for office simply because you're a Muslim. Whereas Christian theocrats, well, they're fine, even though they want to violate the Constitution even more by implementing a theocracy, and Keith Ellison doesn't. So it, I mean, how do you respond to such insanity? This is one of the most basic things about the country. And they're like, me no like it, it doesn't count. Well, then stop saying you believe in the Constitution, stop saying you believe in small government, stop saying you believe in liberty, stop saying you believe in freedom. You don't believe in it. You don't believe in it. It's that simple. Those words have a definition behind it. You don't fit that definition. So if you want to, you know, run full speed into the arms of bigotry and intolerance and hatred, by all means, do that. But at least wear it on your fucking sleeve and have the balls to say, I am a bigot. I am intolerant. I don't believe in liberty. I don't believe in freedom. And I'm going to stand here proudly. At least do that. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, I got more Ben Carson. He is going to trot out the old Republican argument of Democrats have been fooled. Democrats have fooled black people into voting for them. And they shouldn't, of course, Ben Carson is going to say. And then we'll also get to Rush Limbaugh and Michael Savage. And a lot more great stuff. So stay right there, guys. We're just getting started. Matt Shy. Welcome back, people. All right, let's keep going here with similar story here. This one involves Ben Carson as well. Ben Carson sat down for an interview with conservative radio host Gallagher, and he trotted out the old right-wing argument that Democrats and the media manipulate black people to vote for liberals. So he said the following, quote, "American blacks over the course of this next year will begin to see that they've been manipulated very, very largely. More and more, I'm finding, are thinking for themselves and are recognizing what really works for them and for their communities. I believe that it is a dynamic that is in the process of changing. One of the major things that is threatening our nation right now is divisiveness on all levels, gender, race, income, age, religion. They're driving wedges between people. We need a commander-in-chief who understands and tries to promote our unity and not our divisions." All right, so that last part there was in reference to Black Lives Matter. And when he keeps bringing up, well, blacks have been manipulated, that's the problem. And more are waking up now. What he's saying is, well, they were voting Democratic, and now I see some black people are supporting me, so, you know, they're waking up. Okay, so there's a few things to respond to here. First, to the Black Lives Matter point. Black Lives Matter, they're pointing out systemic problems. They're pointing out problems that they have data to back up. So when they call out racism, no, Ben, that's not contributing to racism. This is like a Rush Limbaugh argument he's using here. He's like, oh, yeah, who are the real racists? It's the liberals because they want to talk about race. Yeah, but why are they talking about race? They're talking about race to call out racism. Only in the mind of the far right is calling out racism equal to racism. Because any conversation about race, by definition, as long as the liberals doing it, is racist. It's an amazing way that they've found in their own minds to flip the argument. I mean, they do the same thing with gay rights, where they say, you know, you're a bigot for not accepting my bigotry. You're a bigot because you're telling me I shouldn't be anti-gay. No, you're the bigot because you want to stop gays from getting married. We're just calling out your bigotry. It's the same thing with race. We're calling out racism, and you're going, well, because you're calling out racism, you're really the racist, because you're the one who's, you know, separating everybody by gender, race, income, age, religion, et cetera, et cetera. Now, understand, guys, this is the same guy who just recently was talking about political correctness and the problem that that comes about as a result of that, because nobody tells the truth anymore. And, Ben, I hate to break it to you, but we're not calling you out because we're offended and we're overly PC. We're calling you out on a lot of your statements because your statements are stupid. I mean, you're saying things that are untrue. You're saying things that are ridiculous, so we're firing back. But he can't take it. He can dish it, but he can't take it. So whenever anybody disagrees with him, oh, PC, politically correct crowd, stop it, stop it. And again, this specifically I'm referring to the thing he said about Muslims, how a Muslim shouldn't be president. I never advocate for a Muslim to be president. Anyone as far as to say it's against the Constitution for a Muslim to be president, which is ridiculous. Of course, there's no religious test for office in this country. We're a secular nation. And then to the argument of, well, blacks have been manipulated all this time. You see what he's doing there, right? That's another classic case of projection. Because who really tries to manipulate the African-American community in America? The Democratic Party, the Republican Party. 100% the Republican Party. What do? To try to manipulate blacks? They go, well, our policies might be totally against you, but hey, we're running a token black guy. Don't you want to vote for him? He's black. Isn't that enough for you people? Just vote for him. So you're the one manipulating people. Your entire campaign is one giant manipulation to try to tell black people, I know I'm a Republican, you don't like that, but vote for me because I'm black. Well, they're not going to. I mean, if there was ever, you know, perfect evidence, a lot of far-right people like to say, black people only vote based on race. That's why they voted for Obama. That's what a lot of people on the far-right like to say. If there was ever contrary evidence to that, it's the fact that Ben Carson, not very many black people like Ben Carson. Also, not very many black people like Alan Keyes. Remember Alan Keyes? Not very many black people like Herman Cain. So in reality, is it black people that are voting based on race? Fuck no. There's countless examples of black people where the black community was like, we don't like you. You're not advocating for the policies that we're in favor of. And that's what it really boils down to. Ben, the reason why black people historically have been voting more Democratic for a while now is because the Democrats, simply put, have better policies. They have better policies for the middle class. They have better policies for the poor. They have better policies for minority communities. And they actually give a shit a little bit more. Now, that's not saying the Democrats are perfect. They're, of course, corrupt to a certain degree as well. And we need to try to fix that. We need to try to get the corruption out of both parties. But overwhelmingly, they focus on things that the black community is more in favor of. It's the Democratic Party that doesn't want to go to war nearly as much. It's the Democratic Party that's in favor of a social safety net and equal opportunity and education spending. That's why they're against Republicans. So you're just wrong when you say what you say about how they've been manipulated. The only person or the only group of people or party manipulating them, the Republicans. All right, now let's go to Michael Savage. Right-wing radio host Michael Savage is going to go after Obama here in an absurd way. Let's listen.
Whether he is a Muslim or not is not the issue.
Oh.
The question is, where are his allegiances and alliances?
Mm.
We know he's dedicated to the subversion of Western, white, European, Judeo-Christian-based democracy. Let me repeat that if you missed it. Whether he's a Muslim or not is not the issue. There are many Muslims who are fighting ISIS. He's not one of them. Obama is dedicated to subverting Western, white, Europeans, Judeo-Christian-based democracies. And he's tied directly to others in this Stalinist-style political correctness, which was discussed in great detail on Friday when I talked about Mao Zedong.
Jesus, how many bullshit points can you fit in under a minute? This guy's going for a record here. So if you didn't get the gist of that, Obama is a Muslim-sympathizing or perhaps ISIS-sympathizing Stalinist, like Mao. You want to throw in some more references there. You missed a Hitler one. You want to throw in a Hitler one real fast? Okay. Obviously, this is absurd, but there's a lot there to take away, even from the way he framed it. You notice how he said, Obama's trying to subvert white Judeo-Christian democracy, Western democracy. Whoa. What's white democracy? See, in his mind, he's like, well, I mean, come on. Black people, Hispanic people, even when they're American, are they really American? I mean, this is our country. Let's keep it real. White, Judeo-Christian, Western democracy. And what's this Judeo-Christian bullshit? Acting like the country was founded as a Christian country. I never understood where that talking point came from. Judeo-Christian principles we were founded on, except we were not founded on them in any way, shape, or form. That was perfectly clear. In fact, one of the founders has a famous quote that I think it was Thomas Jefferson who said, "In no way is the United States of America founded on the Christian religion." Again, it was Thomas Jefferson who wrote about separation of church and state in his private letters. You just read the Constitution. You want to know how we could have been established as a Christian nation? They could have just said in the Constitution, "We are a Christian nation." They didn't do that. They said there shall be no religious test for office. So we're a secular country. We're the first official secular country, but he twists that. And he says, well, Obama's against, you know, democracy. Then why is he leading the United States of America? None of it makes any sense, but my favorite claim in there, I don't know if you caught it. It was all ridiculous, but my favorite claim was, he's not fighting ISIS. What? All right, do you guys know how many airstrikes Obama's done? Over 6,000 airstrikes on ISIS. Over 6,000. Does that not count? He's not fighting them, because I'm going to say he's not fighting them, and what I say is true because it's me. Even if it's not true, it's true because I said it, goddammit. Yeah, but Michael, that doesn't make sense. You're making things up. I'm trying to say this in as nice way as I can. I don't know why I'm holding back here, but what you're saying is not reality. And this is the problem, unfortunately, when we talk about the far right today, but even with people who are unfortunately thought leaders, I use that term loosely, on the right. Radio hosts like Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, Michael Savage here, is that they simply live in an alternate universe where He just accused Obama of being a Muslim sympathizing Stalinist like Mao, who's not fighting ISIS, and he's trying to take down democracy by being the president and leading democracy. Even you have to see how ridiculous that is. And anybody who's in that right-wing bubble or considers themselves a conservative, do you really want these guys on your side? That's my question. All right, now we go to Rush Limbaugh. All right, this is going to be a good segment here. Rush Limbaugh went off the rails yesterday, and he went on and on and on about Mars and climate change and how NASA set up a conspiracy that is trying to push a left-wing agenda by giving facts and talking about the amazing new discoveries that just came about. So he went off the rails today because he got some backlash from his original segment on this. There were, you know, Media Matters and some other outlets pointed out the absurd things that he says, and, you know, he couldn't deal with that. So he lost his shit. But let's first take a look at Rush's first segment, which caused the controversy here.
There's so much fraud. Sturgeon came in and said, what's this NASA news? This NASA news is all exciting. He said, yeah, they found flowing water up there. No kidding? Wow! Wow, Sturgeon said. Flowing water on Mars? I said, why does that excite you? What, are you going there next week? What's the big deal about flowing water on Mars? I don't know, man. It just I said, you know what? When they start selling iPhones on Mars, that's when it'll matter to me. I said, what do you think they're going to do with this news? I said, look at the temperature data that has been reported by NASA, has been made up. It's fraudulent for however many years. There isn't any warming. There hasn't been for 18 and a half years. And yet they're lying about it. They're just making up the amount of ice in the North and South Poles. They're making up the temperatures. They're lying and making up false charts and so forth. So what's to stop them from making up something that happened on Mars that will help advance their left-wing agenda on this planet? And Snurdly paused. Oh, yeah, you're right. You know, when I play golf with excellent golfers, I ask them, does it ever get boring playing well? Does it ever get boring hitting shot after shot where you want to hit it? They all look at me and smile and they say, never. Well, folks, it never gets boring being right either, like I am. But it doesn't mean it is any less frustrating. Being right and being alone is a challenging existence. Okay, so there's flowing water on Mars. Hey, you know me. I'm science 101, big-time guy, tech advancing. You know it. I'm all in. But NASA has been corrupted by the current regime. I want to find out what they're going to tell us. Okay, flowing water on Mars. If we're even to believe that, what are they going to tell us that means? That's what I'm going to wait for. Because I guarantee you, let's just wait and see. This is September 28th. Let's just wait and see. Don't know how long it's going to take. But this news that there is flowing water on Mars is somehow going to find its way into a technique to advance the leftist agenda. I don't know what it is. I assume it would be something to do with global warming. And maybe there was once an advanced civilization. If they say they found flowing water, next they're going to find a graveyard.
So many parts that were hilarious. So it's a conspiracy that they found evidence of flowing water on Mars, and it's a conspiracy to push climate change. Rush, why do they need a conspiracy? They already push climate change, and they push it because it's true, not because they have some sort of ulterior motive. You're the one with the ulterior motive. But they're already on the record. You said to yourself they have the charts, they have the data. You think it's made up. It's not made up. But they have all that stuff, and they point to it, and they point to it all the time and say, we got to do something about it. So they're already doing it. Why do they need to make up, ooh, flowing water on Mars? Yes, that's another reason we can use to push it. But why do you need another reason? They already talk about it, and they talk about it because it's true. And so douchey, the Amorite point. You know, my friends who hit good golf shots, I say, do you ever get tired of that? They say, no, I never get tired of being right. So right all the time. Like I said the other day, that's like saying, my cock is gigantic. Did I remind you how big my cock is? It's fucking huge, man. Baby's arm all day long. Who says that? Usually somebody who's not confident in the size of their dick. they gotta try to pump it up, no pun intended, but by talking about it as opposed to, you know, actually having it. It's the same thing as Pastor Manning the other day, who was calling other people gay and faggots and telling them they're dung eaters. Meanwhile, he admitted in the TYT interview that he himself has same-sex attraction. So that's what we're talking about here. And, Rush, the reason why this is such a big story, you dunce, is that if you bother to read any of the articles, they lay out how flowing water means that life is possible. It was possible. So that's pretty fucking big news, man. He's like, oh, science. I don't care about it, even though I pretend to care about it. He said, I'm science 101 myself. Nobody cares less about science than you. You care about your visceral opinion over objective reality all the time. So he did that segment. Everybody followed up and called him a fucking idiot, because they should. And then he lost it. He came on the next day and he started attacking them. But his argument is so precious. Let's listen to it.
According to Gallup, just 4 in 10 Americans say they have a great deal or even a fair amount of trust in the media to report the news fairly and accurately. Now, if I'm in the news media business, now I don't even think they're bothered by this. I think it bothers them the slightest because they are the first to know they're not really in the news business. And they're the first to know that objectivity and credibility is no longer the recipe for what they do. So it probably doesn't bother them, but it is explainable. Let's look at this Mars business. Yesterday we had the most incredible announcement from NASA that, and let's not forget, this is what is not reported in the Politico. I don't know if these local TV info people in Dallas even know what I said. I doubt that anybody reporting on what I said actually knows what I said.
Before that clip there, he had mentioned other outlets he was referring to, the main one being Media Matters. He's saying, I doubt they even read it or heard what I said. I bet none of them heard it. You want to know what Media Matters did? I'm not kidding about this. They quoted him verbatim. Their original post was a video of him going on for over about 2.5 minutes, and then underneath the video, no commentary, nothing like I'm doing right now, here's my opinion, here's why this is wrong, et cetera, et cetera. No. It was just the transcript of what he said. It was just a transcript. They quote him verbatim, and he says,
I bet none of them even know what I said. They're always taking me out of context.
They gave the full fucking context. They gave your literal words. And that's how you know how pathetic Rush Limbaugh is. And this happens all the time with people on the far right. They're so ridiculous, and they're so stupid, that you can quite literally quote them, read it to them, and they go,
oh, that's outrageous. That sounded really stupid, so I'm against those comments.
That's right. And you're the one that fucking made them. That's the problem. That's our whole reason for bringing this up. It's always the other guy's fault. It's never like, okay, you know, my thing was off, let me clarify. No. It's,
fucking, you know how these guys are. Always quoting me verbatim and showing how big of an idiot I am. That's not fair.
By the way, he went on in his follow-up rant here to say that NASA wants to go to Mars and Obama has turned NASA over to Muslim outreach, in case you've forgotten. That's a quote. He said, quote, NASA wants to go to Mars, and Obama has turned NASA over to Muslim outreach, in case you've forgotten. Number one, I have no clue what the fuck that means, but I don't think Rush Limbaugh knows what that means either. But it leads to my conclusion, and here's why I brought that up. His entire point yesterday and his entire follow-up segment today was about how NASA and the liberals, they have an agenda, and they're pushing their agenda, and they're ignoring the facts to push their agenda. That's why they're saying that there's water on Mars and stuff. That's his argument. the entire thing is projection. Because all of that applies to Rush Limbaugh. He's the one who has an agenda. He's the one who's trying to protect the oil companies, protect the fossil fuel companies, and say that climate change is bullshit. He's the one that's trying to push his right-wing agenda nonstop. And the best example of it is when he randomly blames Muslims and says, "Did NASA, Obama turned NASA over to Muslim outreach." Why the fuck? Muslims do not belong in this conversation in any way. Why the fuck would you bring it up? You brought it up because you can't help yourself, because all you do is push your narrative despite the facts, as you accuse the other side of pushing a narrative despite the facts. Okay. We're going to take our final break, and when we come back, oh boy, we got to get into abortion, because the worst congressman on abortion is back, and he went on MSNBC to spread propaganda and say things that are outlandish. Then Rick Santorum and Bill Maher debate. That's a fun segment. And I made sure to leave us a heaping dose of religious stupidity for at the end of the show. Brian Fisher's in the show today. It's been a while since he's been in the show. And a really sad story, actually, coming out of India. And unfortunately, what the downside can be if you really, really, really do believe in a literal interpretation of your religion. So we'll talk about that and much more. Stay right there, guys. We'll be right back. Thank you. be a try, guys. Welcome back. All right, let's go to Trent Franks. Republican Congressman Trent Franks went on MSNBC to discuss this recent sham hearing that they're doing on Planned Parenthood, and he made an unfortunate comparison.
Back again now under Kevin McCarthy, do you think, with the new speaker, do you expect this issue to rear up again?
I think so. You know, this country, the last issue that tore us apart like this was slavery. And it was the same argument. Those that were for slavery said, well, there's not really a personhood here. There's no person involved here. The Supreme Court said the same thing, just like they did in Roe versus Wade. But there were those who understood that the foundational core principle that made this country what it was that we believe that all of us are created, and that makes us equal. And that means that we should protect the most innocent among us, and that's the greatest test of who we are, is how we treat those who cannot defend themselves. And there is no one more defenseless in all of humanity than these little unborn children.
Arizona Congressman Trent Franks, Republican from Arizona.
Isn't it incredible that apparently he didn't stop and think for a second and go, you know, this is actually pretty disrespectful to former slaves and to the families of people who have ancestors who were slaves, to basically compare a fetus, and in some cases, because this guy's an extremist, so he goes further, embryos, zygotes, and gametes to human beings. He's like, well, this is just like slavery. I mean, the issue here is, do they have personhood? Well, I can answer that. No, they do not. For slaves, they are people. They were people. So, yeah, they should be treated like people. They should have human rights. But when you talk about a gamete, a zygote, an embryo, a pregestation fetus, to try to pretend like it's not a more complex situation, you're just being disingenuous. And that's the problem with this guy. Now, we covered a story about him recently where he made a similar comparison, and he went on and on about how this is the biggest moral issue of our time. Remember, this is coming from a guy, and this is coming from a political party that was 100% in favor of the Iraq War, 100% in favor of the Afghanistan War, 100% in favor of the drone campaign. They never met a war they didn't love. So they claim to be pro-life until we're talking about actual human beings. These guys are also in favor of the death penalty. But then they make arguments like, oh, every human life is precious. Unless I don't agree with that life, then it's not precious. And the most important thing to remember, guys, is in the United States of America, 98% of abortions happen before viability, which means we're dealing with a fetus or, again, embryo, gamete, zygote. We're dealing with entities that feel no pain whatsoever. They cannot. The nervous system has not been developed. And if you really want to take your argument to its logical conclusion, well then, do you really believe that the second you're done having sex, there's three people in the room, and the, as Bill Maher calls it, the pile of goo that is now in the woman's body, it has Second Amendment rights, it has First Amendment rights, you go down the list. That thing is a human being in every single sense of the term. Are you really silly enough to believe that? No, but you can't believe that because, again, to deny that this is a much more complex issue than slavery, you're just being disingenuous. But they believe it in a way that's very religious in nature, which brings up that point as well, which is that if these guys would actually read the fucking Bible, they've been told all along, you know, Christianity and the Bible, that's the reason you should be pro-life and against abortion. But as we've detailed on this show, you go through the Bible, and you'll see it's actually pro-abortion. I mean, there's a part where God goes through Samaria and rips out the fetuses from the stomachs of the women. That's quite literally God performing abortions. But there's another part of it where God says if your wife cheats on you, you have to give her what they call bitter water. And if she drinks it and then she miscarries, a.k.a. has an abortion, well, that was the baby of the son of a bitch she cheated on you with. But if she drinks it and everything is all good, well, then that's your baby and it's okay. So in other words, that's very clearly saying if your wife cheats on you, she should get an abortion. That's in the Bible. So even if you take the religious angle to this, They don't even know what the fuck is in their religion. They're just listening to their dumbass pastors and their parents' pastors and their grandparents' pastors who said all along, Bible against abortion, got to stand up against abortion. That's what you got to do. But that's not true. In my opinion, there's no rational reason to be in the camp that these guys are in where they say, all abortion, off the table. Off the table, it should be illegal, no questions asked. And again, this is coming from somebody who actually does have, I think, a nuanced take on it, where I say, okay, let's be smart here. There should be some regulations, just like Roe versus Wade. I'm the kind of guy who I agree 100% with Roe versus Wade. Now, Roe versus Wade allows you in late trimesters for certain states to have certain regulations, and you can even ban it in late trimesters. I'm fine with that. I think that makes sense. So I think there is a middle ground, sane approach here where you talk about, okay, do we cut it off of viability? Do we do here? Do we do there? What are the exceptions? Rape, life of the mother, et cetera. But for these guys, as they do, to pretend like there's no legitimate conversation to be had and to say this is equal to slavery, no, you're clearly just not a deep thinker if you believe that. And I also, of course, didn't mention the most important part, which is that the hearing that they're having, do you guys understand it has nothing to do with abortion? So they're having the hearing on Planned Parenthood, and they're talking about abortion nonstop, but this has nothing to do with abortion, because all the funding that the federal government gives to Planned Parenthood is going towards other things that Planned Parenthood does. They're already not allowed to take federal tax dollars and put it towards abortion. So for the 3% of the work that they do that is abortion, people pay out of pocket. So all these guys are grandstanding over abortion and acting like a big moral issue. Oh, yes, we got to cut off funding to Planned Parenthood because of abortion. Well, dipshit, mission accomplished. You can fly the banner that George Bush has probably in his attic right now. Because you win. The Hyde Amendment makes it so that you – federal tax dollars do not fund abortion. So let's wrap this up here, big guy. I want to press the button from the Chappelle Show. Wrap it up. You're done. But see, it in their mind, it's not even really about that. They just want to take down, apparently, all women's reproductive health. They want to get rid of all free clinics. And what's going to happen as a result of that? You should already know. We're going to have STDs would skyrocket. Ironically, abortions would skyrocket. Because what's the solution here? The solution to unwanted pregnancies, the pill, IUDs, condoms, all the things that Planned Parenthood does, that's the solution. But they want to live in fantasy land where you can eliminate Planned Parenthood, you can eliminate free clinics, you can eliminate sex education, and you also decrease the number of abortions, decrease the number of STDs, so on and so forth. And that is impossible. That's Narnia. All right. Now we go to Rick Santorum and Bill Maher. Rick Santorum and Bill Maher debated socialism on Real Time. This is from about a month ago. Let's check it out.
I notice all Republicans are able to dismiss Bernie Sanders with one word, socialist. Like, case closed. I don't have to argue anymore. He's a socialist. Social security is socialism, but would you campaign against that?
Well, what I think Chris Matthews' question to Debbie Wasserman Schultz was really the operative question. What's the difference between a socialist and a Democrat? And to this day, my understanding, she has not answered, even though she's been asked multiple times. And the truth is that the Democratic Party is basically a socialist party these days.
Wait a second. America and every
but
modern...
You tell me the difference. What's the difference between a Democrat and a socialist?
Well, I wish the Democrats were socialists.
Okay, well, okay. Tell me how they're not.
Okay, I will.
Tell me how they're not.
Okay. But every modern country is a quasi-socialist country, including the United States. And again, you would not vote to repeal Social Security, would you? And if you wouldn't, then you are also quasi-socialist.
No, just because the program...
Or the Veterans Administration.
Just because the government does certain functions that we believe should be socialized doesn't mean that we're a socialist. For example, I mean, the fact that we provide for a common defense and that we fund the defense budget, does that make us socialists? Because the government is doing that? Of course, the more...
Yeah, it does. It makes that institution socialist. We don't have private mercenary armies all over the place. We have... It's funded by the U.S. taxpayers. It is socialism. I mean, same thing with the post office, same thing with... And this, then you get to a state-by-state level, but it's still socialism. Police force, fire department, roads. I mean, you go down the list. I mean... The definition of socialism is a political and economic theory of social organization that advocates the means of production, distribution, and exchange should be owned or regulated by the community as a whole. That means anything that we decide at a government level, hey, this we should prioritize this, we should do that with the money. All of those things, whatever they may be, those things are, by definition, socialism. Now, obviously, there's other definitions of socialism. In Marxist theory, socialism is the transitionary period between capitalism and communism. But this is the most commonly used and accepted definition of socialism. When people talk about socialism today in casual conversation, this is what they're referring to. So, yeah, Rick, that is what socialism is. And let's face it, the difference between the Republican Party and the Democratic Party is that the Republicans are for all the shitty kinds of socialism. So, for example... The Republicans, by and large, are for corporate welfare. That's a shitty form of socialism. It's saying, hey, let's take taxpayer dollars from middle class and poor people and give it to people who are already rich and already well-to-do. They're also for, or they were for, the bailouts. You can have all these different Wall Street firms, these investment banks, these hedge funds make horrendous decisions. They crash. And then the government goes, well, okay, well, you gave me money for my campaign, so now I'm going to bail you out. I'm going to give you money from the taxpayers. That's a shitty form of socialism. That really is the opposite of free market capitalism when the government picks winners and losers, and they say, oh, would you look at that? The people who donate to my campaign happen to be the winners. Now, would the government do that if, you know, your local deli went out or if the place where you get your dry cleaning done, if they went under? Is the government going to rush in there and say, oh, we got to, this is a community staple, we have to save them? No, they only did it for the rich. They only did it for the people on Wall Street. Well, that's a shitty form of socialism. What they could have done is a better form of socialism when we had the crash and bailed out the people, but they didn't do that. They bailed out the people who were politically connected. Another example that the Republicans are for, including guys like Rick Santorum, rampant military spending. That is socialism. And Marr goes on to bring up that point in more detail about how we have no bid contracts and you have basically the military saying, we don't need any more tanks, we don't need any more fighter jets, we don't even know where to fucking put them. And then Congress still decides to pass the bills anyway. And the result is you have in Nevada tanks that are sitting there that are just fucking collecting dust. This is the military-industrial complex. This is the worst form of socialism. Over 50% of our discretionary spending goes towards the military. That's socialism, and that's shitty socialism. At least the Democrats are in favor of socialism in better areas. Now, they don't go far enough, in my opinion, when it comes to the social safety net, when it comes to health care, and you can go down a list of things, education, where I think they should spend more. So they don't spend enough there, but at least they actually care about the things that other modern nations care about and that they put an emphasis on. And then finally, let me just say this. When he tries to say, well, there's no difference between the Democratic Party and socialists. And what he means when he says socialists is socialists, or, you know, social democrats, as we talk about. So in the Scandinavian region. Like, in his mind, he thinks, oh, Democrats in America have gone so far left now, they're so extreme. Wrong. Unfortunately, the Democrats, along with caring more about having their money go towards social safety net programs and things like that, unfortunately, they're still tagging right along with the Wall Street jackasses, tagging right along with the military-industrial complex. They may not be as bad as the Republicans, but they still do the shitty kind of socialism over the better kind of socialism. So when Bill Maher says, I wish the Democrats were more like socialists, what he's saying is, I wish we chose what kind of socialism we do better, socialism for the poor, socialism for the middle class, or socialism for the rich, which is counterproductive and which pisses everybody off. Okay. All right, now we go to Brian Fisher. Evangelical Christian radio host Brian Fisher wants to lay out some ground rules for new immigrants coming to America. Let's watch.
Strangers are welcome here in the United States under one condition, that they be willing to assimilate completely into American culture, that they be willing to adopt their God, that they be willing to adopt our Judeo-Christian heritage. Notice it's a Judeo-Christian heritage. We and the Jewish people share the same heritage, the same moral standards. So because they're part of the Judeo-Christian tradition and they honor it and revere it, they would be welcome here. Adopt our Christian holidays, not come into this country and expect to have special holidays, Muslim holidays. If you come to America, you understand that we are a Christian country, and therefore we observe Christian holidays. Don't expect us to make room for your holidays. We're expecting you to accommodate yourself to our standards, our traditions, and our holidays. We will expect you to adopt our Christian moral values. No place, no room for Sharia law in the United States. We will expect you. You'll be welcome here. We'll open our arms to you. We'll open our hearts to you. We'll open our communities to you. We will expect you to adopt our cultural and Christian moral standards. We will expect you to adopt our Christian heroes, and we will expect you to adopt our Christian history.
So, according to Brian Fisher, strangers and immigrants are welcome in the country as long as you, number one, convert, number two, celebrate our holidays, number three, call us a Christian country, and number four, reject Sharia. All right, now erase everything he said there, take out the word Christian, put in the word secular, and then he'd be right. See, that's what America is really about. So if you're Muslim and you want to come here, if you're Christian and you want to come here, if you're Buddhist, if you're Hindu, if you're, it doesn't matter what religion or group you're part of, what ethnicity, nationality, I don't care. You can be pretty much anything. But as long as you accept secularism, then yes, you can come and we'll welcome you with open arms. But he flipped it, and he took out secularism, he put in Christianity, which ironically makes it so that he doesn't understand America, and if he were coming here today, we should probably reject him. Because it's true, if somebody's going to come here and they're going to say, I am a fundamentalist of any religion, take fundamentalist Muslims and coming from Syria and, you know, people who have sketchy stuff in their background, and they say, yeah, I'm going to come here, but I'm also going to try to change the culture and try to change the laws to make it so that you're not a secular country anymore, I would say piss off. But see, I'm consistent. I would say that if it's a Muslim fundamentalist, and I'd say that if it's a Christian fundamentalist, if it's somebody like Brian Fisher coming in today and they're saying, yes, I want to force everybody to do my religion, okay, then there's the door. Don't let it hit you in the ass on the way out. See, that's the thing. So at the heart of what he's saying, if you take out Christian and put in secular, there is something true there. That we can only be tolerant of other people that are tolerant, of course. But the thing is, he would fail the real test. The real test being, you have to accept the basics being civil liberties, the Constitution, and secularism. As long as you are okay with civil liberties, the Constitution, and secularism, then I welcome you here. But Brian Fisher isn't even on board with civil liberties, the Constitution, and secularism. Brian Fisher is an extremist. And when he said at the end there, you have to reject Sharia to come here, in my mind I went, jackass, you're in favor of Christian Sharia. He doesn't get it. He doesn't understand it. He hasn't thought through this in any serious way. He doesn't get that on the political spectrum, he's much fucking closer to a Muslim fundamentalist than a liberal or than a constitutionalist. It's so ironic that Muslim fundamentalists hate Christian fundamentalists and Christian fundamentalists hate Muslim fundamentalists, because if you go through a list, issue for issue, political issue for political issue, they're going to check off a lot of the same boxes and agree with each other. It's just that, you know, since in their mind you're talking about a religious war or religious battle and us versus them mentality, no matter what, even though they agree, they can't see that they agree because they're so blinded by their religion. And that's the problem overall here, is that a guy like Brian Fisher, he thinks America is his, but what he defines as his is the Christian Saudi Arabia. And that is most certainly not what we are, Brian. All right, now, believe it or not, I'm not done with the Christian fundamentalists yet, and we managed to find one dumber than Brian Fisher. I just said it. Todd Bentley is a Christian evangelist from Canada, and he's an utter lunatic. I mean, he's so out there that he makes Mike Huckabee look like a moderate. He makes Rick Santorum look like a moderate. So look at this awesome new claim that he's making about having magical powers.
Had a dead body we could pray for, but we don't. That would have been a great illustration. But I don't think anybody wants to sign up for that. But if we had one, this would be great. I'd have them at the altar under the sheep and just be preaching. I've done that, by the way. In Africa, I have a tent so they can bring the dead, put them in the tent while I'm preaching so they don't stink in the sun. And that's a true literal story, by the way. I actually have a Raising the Dead tent that I've used for 10 years in Africa. I also use it for the demon-possessed, because I figured the dead and the demon-possessed could be in the same tent. I actually put a sign on my tent called Dead Raising Tent. And people go, why do you have a tent called Dead Raising? I go, well, if I'm preaching in a city and anybody dies, I ask them to bring them to the meeting, we put them in the tent, and we pray over them, and if nothing happens, we bury them. I said, give me 2 days. I mean, so if they're fresh, it's the closer they are to freshly dead, the easier they are to resurrect. The more days that get in there, once you get past the four-day mark, it's somebody sent me a ridiculous prayer request. They're like, well, you know, they've been dead for 2 years. Can we still go for it? And I said, I think this is a joke, but biblically, you know, Lazarus was 4 days or whatever, so we could probably hit that max, but all joking aside, we really do pray for the dead to be raised. Literally. So whenever we have opportunity, we at least go for it. If nothing happens, we bury them. So we do take prayer requests. When people die, they call us or they email us, and we pray. And then if nothing happens, we bury them. But we've prayed for probably 1,000 resurrections. Literally. And we've had 35 resurrections of the dead. Testimonies of people raised from the dead.
It actually scares me that somebody can lie that brazenly. I mean, think about if you were out there telling a lie that was that obvious, and you were saying it with a straight face. Wouldn't you have trouble sleeping? Wouldn't you think, like, what have I done? My reputation, I'm now a pathetic human. Like, what? How has that not occurred to him? He has no problem just going out there and lying. Oftentimes we have the debate, we have the conversation of what are certain people on the far right liars, idiots, and we go through the list. This guy, I'm convinced, is just an utter liar. In fact, we did a story about him once before where he said, it rained gold. He saw it rain gold because he was doing this prayer revival meeting and everybody was preaching and talking to the Lord, and then it started raining gold. I think he said, I turned to gold one time. So it's just, he's a fucking liar, and he has no problem just lying nonstop. That's what we're looking at here. And isn't it hilarious that he said at one point, I got an email request. They said, can you resurrect this person who's been dead for 2 years? I said, this is ridiculous. This must be some kind of joke. And then he's like, 4 days is the max. As if he really can bring people back from the dead. Dude, stop. Stop. Just stop. I mean, honestly, in all seriousness, this is grounds enough, in my opinion, where I think the authorities should be looking into this guy and make sure, like, what the fuck is a guy like this capable of? He just goes in front of the world and says shit like that. He's probably got some fucked up things in his past, and he does. I'm going to get to that, by the way, what we already know. So he was big in the Florida revival movement, this guy, and which is like, it was like a Christian rock / Christian gathering where people would speak in tongues and talk to the Lord and then listen to music. It was just weird, and he was a leader of that movement. And we also know this about him. Talk about questionable character. Quote, Bentley was known to forcefully kick, hit, smack, or knock over participants. In one incident, a man was knocked over and lost a tooth. In another, an elderly woman was intentionally kicked in the face. Bentley held that the Holy Spirit led him to such actions, saying that those incidents were taken out of context, adding that miracles were happening simultaneously. So as you were kicking old women in the face, there were also miracles happening, so back off of him for kicking women in the face. No, this dude is off his fucking rocker. He's a brazen liar, and he's hurting people and saying, it's okay, I'm allowed to do it, because God's on my side. Ooh, that's a slippery slope, man. And, of course, unsurprisingly, this guy had a wife, cheated on his wife, got divorced, and remarried. What happened to your you know, religious values there, buddy? That's out the window. And, oh yeah, when he was a teenager, he sexually assaulted a young boy. This guy's all fucked up. Apparently, when he was younger also, he was, like, really, really addicted to drugs, and he overdosed at one point, and then he got out of doing drugs, was saved by Christianity. But it's clear that in this guy's case, he has one of those personalities, and he's just kind of off naturally, where he's so inclined to get addicted to drugs, and then he just traded that out for something arguably even more extreme, which is just this incredible fundamentalist wacko version of religion where he does shit like this and he says shit like this. But the final thing I want to bring up real fast is a challenge. So, okay, so you say 35 out of 1,000 people. Is that what he said? Was it 1,000 or 100? However many people he tried to raise. That's how many people you were able to actually raise from the dead. So let's set up an experiment. Let's get some scientists in there. We'll record it for TV, do some sort of special. You know, you could play it on, who's the guy who busts these assholes, The Amazing Randy or something. You could play it on whatever channel you want, make a big thing of it, and then we will prove, without a doubt, that you're a liar. You can't raise anybody from the dead, because we can't raise people from the fucking dead, and we'll expose you further. But the sad aspect of this is, sometimes it doesn't even matter how many times you expose somebody. There are still enough vulnerable people out there and people who don't know the histories of these different con artists who will fall for it no matter what. Peter Popoff is a great example, the guy who would sell water saying it was holy water and it will cure your cancer and cure your bankruptcy. He was off TV for a little bit and then he went right fucking back on TV. Or the Canadian guy, Kevin Trudeau, or is that his name, or something else, Trudeau, where he would sell this book of natural cures. No, the cures were real cures. And he would make up studies from different universities. They'd be like, we never did a study on that. And then he would go away for a little bit and just come right back. Unfortunately, con artists have a way of reappearing even after they're debunked, which just means it's a never-ending battle. And the good guys can't surrender, we just have to continue debunking them over and over and over because it's the right thing to do. All right, and finally, let's get to a really sad story to finish on here. The AFP is reporting that a Muslim man in India was beaten to death for allegedly eating beef. They say, quote, Indian police said Wednesday they had arrested six people after a 50-year-old Muslim man was beaten to death over rumors he had eaten beef, a taboo in the Hindu-majority nation. Muhammad Akhlaq was dragged from his house and attacked by around 100 people. His 22-year-old son was also seriously injured in the attack and was in intensive care at a nearby hospital. Killing cows is banned in many states of India, a majority Hindu country that also has a sizable Muslim, Christian, and Buddhist minority. In March, the state of Maharashtra toughened its ban to make even possessing beef illegal, a sign of growing power of hardline Hindus since nationalist Prime Minister Modi came to power. The rumors that the family had eaten beef began when a calf was reported missing in Dadri village. An announcement about the family consuming beef was made at a temple, after which the mob descended on the man's house. So he was beaten with bricks, and you ready for this? At the end of this all, they didn't even have beef. Now, even if they did, of course, it's still ridiculous. You don't kill somebody for something like that. but they didn't even have it. All right, this is the problem with fundamentalist religion. Now, all the time on the show, you guys know, we go after ultra-Orthodox Jews, we go after fundamentalist Christians, we go after fundamentalist Muslims. Here we have a case of essentially fundamentalist Hindus who think cows are sacred, and if you in any way, shape, or form harm a cow, you eat beef, you have beef, whatever, well, you're done. We're going to kill you. We're so in favor of the life of the cow that we will take the life of a human. Okay, well, that's ridiculous. Now, it's a different conversation if you want to talk about how you treat animals in general, and you're somebody who thinks, hey, we shouldn't harm any animals for any reason or whatever. Okay, I'm sure there's some intellectual backing for that, and we can debate that. But what we're talking about here is blind religiosity. And make no mistake about it, this is just 100% based on false beliefs and brainwashing within fundamentalist Hindu culture, where that idea is passed on from generation to generation that, no, you don't get it. Cows are sacred, and you can't do anything ever against a cow, and if we think you do, you're done. So the problem is the belief, and we need to attack the belief in order to progress and move forward and move past stuff like this. And this goes across all the different versions of religions and all the different fundamentalist religions. Wherever we see bad ideas, it is, of course, not bigotry or intolerance to point out the bad ideas and say, we shouldn't do that. No, that's the right thing to do. The right thing to do is to say, when you're acting in a way that is immoral and unethical, we're going to call you out and try to stop it and try to nip it in the bud so that you don't continue passing on ridiculous belief, which will inevitably get more people killed for no reason at all. All right, I'm out of time, guys. I love you. I'll see everybody tomorrow. Have a great night. Peace.